Are you doing the verse?
Yes.
Sanskrit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Indriyani,
Indriyani
Mano,
Mano
Buddhir,
Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam
Uchyate
Etair
Vimohayatyesha
Jnanam
Avritya
Dehinam
Indriyani
Mano
Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam Uchyate
Eter
Vimohayatyesha Jnana Avritya Dehinam Indriyani
Mano Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam Uchyate Eter Vimohayatyesha Jnanam Avritya Dehinam Indriyani
Mano Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam Uchyate
Eter
Vimohayatyesha Jnanam Avritya Dehinam
Indriyani Mano Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam Uchyate
Etairvimohayatyesha
Jnanam Avritya Dehinam
Indriyani Mano Buddhir
Asyadhishthanam Uchyate
Etairvimohayatyesha
Jnanam
Avritya
Dehinam
Indriyani,
the senses.
Mana,
the mind.
Buddhi,
the intelligence.
Asya,
of the lust.
Adishthanam,
sitting place.
Uchyate,
called.
Etai,
by all these.
Vimohayati,
bewilders.
Esha,
of this.
Jnanam,
knowledge.
Avritya,
covering.
Dehinam, the embodied. Translation. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Purport. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places, so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus the mind is the reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such sinful, lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify himself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke swadhi kala radishu bhauma idyadhi yatirta buddhi shalite nakarhichij janeshvabhigyesho saeva gokara. A human being who identifies this body made of the three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth as worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge, is to be considered as an ass or a cow. So Krishna is now explaining the process for serving him. That when we go to serve the Lord, then the difficulty is that we have a conditioned nature. And then this conditioned nature then creates difficulty. Difficulty it creates is that it creates so many different identities, so many different unnecessary activities. So here then Krishna has explained how we should engage everything in his service, and then he goes on to explain how we should be controlled, because desires may be uncontrolled. So then he explains that therefore you should stick to your own duties rather than another's duties. Because this is the first symptom we see of this lust, is that we have so many desires and we want to fulfill those desires. But if they do not come very easily by, our reactions to our past activities, the tendency is to think, well, how can I get this some way or another? So naturally we look, okay, this person has the things I want, how did they get them? They did these things, then they got that. So then naturally the next step is, well, if I do those things, I'll get that. So that means then we give up our duties and then take up someone else's duties to get desires that we don't actually need. So then Arjuna is then inquiring, so then how do we identify this lust? How does this lust work? Because to do that, to stick to doing our duty for Krishna, means we have to control the senses. We have to control the desires of the mind. So then how to do this? So then Krishna then describes how this lust is then situated in the body. So in here he's mentioning, then in the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. So the mind, it has the desire. Because happiness is dependent upon fulfillment of desire. That is how things work here. If we think about it, it's a very simple thing. Mind gets what it wants, it's happy. Whether it's direct or indirect, you may have been thinking, endeavoring for one thing, and something else that you were not thinking about came. But you're happy because it's something you do want. Right? So then, like that, if the mind gets what it wants, there's happiness. And if it doesn't get what it wants, there's unhappiness. So then here, then the mind being the center of the senses, then this is the main place to where the lust is sitting. The mind wants. So that's the lust. And then it engages the senses to get those things. Then the second thing that it mentions then is the intelligence. Because to guide the senses, one needs intelligence. Mind has the idea, right? Mind dreams up the ideas. and it gets the intelligence to get the work done, to figure it out. Right? The mind's the boss, then engages the intelligence, you know, as the assistant, that you figure it out, right? The boss is too big to work these things out, right? The boss just has, you know, the visionary, you know, looking to the future. And then you get someone else to, you know, do the footwork. So the intelligence works it out, and the senses get it done. So this intelligence then will see what it is that ways you can get it. This is very interesting. So then Prabhupada's pointing out, and then because the intelligence is the next door neighbor to the soul, it's the closest thing to the soul, then the problem is that the living entity then identifies with it, with that intelligence. This is the weakness, is that because the intelligence is getting so many things done, we think this is me, right? Like that. Like there's the... I just heard today, there's this saying, you know, love yourself, love others. You know, it's some new age thing. You know, if you actually have a... If you feel badly about yourself, you think you're a nonsense, then you won't be able to be nice to others. So if you really love yourself and confident about yourself, then you'll be able to expand that affection to others. So that's because then that's who you are. You love yourself. You love who you are. So your intelligence, how it is working, then you will identify with that. So this intelligence then gives rise to the false ego. Because first to enjoy something means the mind will come up with some idea. But it's general. The intelligence will put together things. It will catch this and it will catch that and it will try to put it together in different ways. You can try it like this, you can try it like that. And once you find something that matches, you like it, then you say, that's me. Right? Like even sometimes, also, phrase will be used if someone is, you know, trying out something. You're saying, what do you think of this, what do you think of that? And if you like it, or you don't like it, nah, that's not me. Right? So it's just, so you put two things together that you like, then that's what you do. And that's you. It's your desire, it's you. So through this matching of the intelligence, then we put together so many false identities. So Krishna is pointing that out here, is that we have to see what is actually mechanically going on. So lust is there, but then we can just step back and analyze it. It is possible. Though the mind doesn't want to acknowledge it because it's not a function of the mind. Right? The mind does not analyze things. It simply dreams up ideas. But it can't analyze them. That it depends upon the intelligence. And then from there, then comes our ego. Right? So we see is from it goes down like this. Mind, intelligence, ego. Prabhupada's given it in this order. That's also how it manifests. The mind comes first because it manifests out of goodness. The intelligence out of passion, it does the work. And then the ignorance then manifests false ego. Because that's then the gross nature. Yes, this is me. So we have to then step back and just see, what is it the mind wants? Is it actually useful or not? Just because it wants it, we have great desire, doesn't mean it's useful. It could be stupid. Right? Then we look at, and then how is the intelligence going about it? It put together in a certain way, and then we say, that's us. But the thing is what Krishna is saying, is you should do this whole process for Him. That's how he started off the chapter, is that you do your activities for me. So according to the scriptural injunctions, then you have desire. Then the intelligence has to work to get that. So do that according to how I also give direction. Then you're going to have an ego from that. You take up the ego that Krishna gives. Right? Then it works. Then you do that. Then you can take these enemies and engage them in Krishna's service. Then we can purify ourselves and get out of the material world. So that's the whole concept of this section on Karma Yoga, is how to take the desire for results, the desire for fruit, and engage it in Krishna's service. Because in the beginning, we won't get away from having desire. In our mind, we don't want to have desire. If we ask any devotee, you want to have so much material desire, you'll generally see, no, what's your goal? I want to go back to Godhead. You know, so you want to have all these attachments? No. But Krishna's pointing out, but they are there. So then what are you going to do about them? So then basically Krishna is giving two alternatives. One is follow his directions, or two is follow your own directions. Your own directions then are what's mentioned here, lust. Like that. So it's a simple, it's very simple. It means when you get up into the principles, it's very simple. So there's Krishna's direction, which is liberating the regulative principles of freedom, or there's lust, right? Of course, nowadays we will take that term lust, it's kind of gross, it's rough, you know, it's very pointed, and we'll give it so many euphemisms like that. We'll say something, you know, fulfilling one's needs, you know, we'll do something with it to try to make it sound good, you know, like ethnic cleansing, you know, I mean, it sounds good. Right? You know, it sounds nice. You know, yes, good to have a good, clean, you know, ethnic population, you know. But that's still, it doesn't change what's going on. Lust is lust. We may give it some nice romantic or some philosophical or some other kind of thing. So Krishna's saying is, I've given these directions, you follow them, that's good. You don't follow them, that's not good. Right? Because Arjuna was following Krishna's directions, but indirectly. He was not following the Vedic culture to please Krishna. He was following it to please himself. So Krishna said, this is wrong. So now Arjuna then, understanding that's wrong, then said, okay, I won't follow this Krishna's injunctions in this culture and philosophy. So now Krishna's trying to point out the other way. That's also wrong. Right? Because it's your own desire, your lust, this, that, it's going to create the problems. It's created the problems in following, it's going to create the same problems not following. So you have to follow Krishna's direction. So then, here, then, this is a very technical thing. Means Krishna has given this to practically use in our life. He hasn't given this just to some nice philosophy. This is the key, is that when things come up, desires come up, that we don't like, we have to analyze them. What it is? Does it actually work? Has anybody become happy by that? You know, what you can get from it? What is the benefit of doing it in some way that's not in connection with Krishna consciousness? And just analyze it. By that analyzation, then we can see, it may loosen our great, you know, emotional driving force towards it and make us stop to think that, well, I'm still interested, but I can see it's not really good. Emotionally, I'm interested or attached, but intellectually, I can understand it's not so good. So then from that, you can loosen the ego. Because that's the thing. It means, just like this, Prabhupada's explained, the mind's had the idea, the intelligence then works on it, it creates the ego. So if we want to undo it, we have to do it the other way. You have to give up the ego that, yes, I'm going to enjoy the material nature through this process. Right? You know, that's me. I'm going to enjoy in this way. I'm going to enjoy something, whatever it is. You know, I'm the whatever. We may have some identity that I am the enjoyer in some way, controller in some way. In some way, I am getting something out of this material nature. And as soon as we give up that identity, then you can loosen the whole thing. Because it's anchored with that ego. You give up the ego, it's loose. It's like a boat without a rudder. Then it can't really function. The mind can think it, intelligence can work it out, but until you identify with it, it doesn't take effect. Right? You can look at so many things. You know, do I want this one, this one, this one, this one, this one? But until you identify with one of them, it doesn't become focused. So it's general. So you've already loosened it. So this is a very key thing, how to conquer lust, how to conquer material desire, is give up the ego that this is me. This is what I want to enjoy in this way. I want to be, you know, the supreme controller of the universe. You know, so I give that up. Okay, Krishna is the supreme controller, this and that. I may have the idea, but once you give that up, then it can go. So we say to Krishna, we want to be pure, we want to serve you, surrender to you. But then that means we have to give up those egos that are keeping us from Krishna. Right? The desire is there. That's there. But desire can only fructify when that ego is there. So when we can give up that ego, then we can get giving up these desires. Right? Then we can give up the lust. So it's a very, very, how do you say? Analytical and very practical system. That if we look at this nicely, we see how it functions, then we can see, yes, we can give these things up. So when we want to give them up, then Krishna will help. Right? Because Krishna is going to help. He's the one that removes all these anarthas and that. But we have to want them to be gone. We have to want them to be given up. So if we're telling Krishna, yes, I want to surrender to you, at the same time as we're cultivating in the other side so much, you know, identification with the material energy and endeavor, then it's very hard for Krishna to get rid of it. We're saying, I don't want it, but we're endeavoring for it or identifying with it. You know, then Krishna will try. Okay, you know, then we will find that we get so many things. Wherever is our ego, then we find it gets bothered. Right? Generally we find we don't get bothered in something we have no ego about. Right? Where our ego is, if someone pokes there, then it creates a disturbance, you know, to our ego. So then wherever that disturbance is, we can check that. That will be where there's been some endeavor by the intelligence and some desire by the mind. So otherwise, why would one, it won't, if it's not there, there's no ego, means there's no desire, there's no line there. But if there is, that means then there's some anarthas are going on there. And Krishna, therefore, so many things are happening all day that will bother somebody's ego. But it doesn't bother ours. Right? So many times we must have experience where you've heard of others or friends or acquaintances or even just in a conversation of another person. They got disturbed. Somebody did this and they got so disturbed and this and that. And then you think yourself, you know, what's the big deal? Who cares about that? You know, it's like that. Or it's the way material nature is. Or that's India, or that's this, or that. Because it doesn't bother you. But it bothered that person. You know, so where it bothers us, that's where the ego is, that's where the desires are. So if we analyze that, then we'll see that this process, then Krishna is trying to remove those. So you have to start there. So either we give it up ourselves, right, that willingly, or Krishna has to come and in some, you know, various ways, remove it for us. And then if we stick to that point, yes, I want to surrender, then when those do happen, then we become humble. Otherwise, if not, it happens, and why is this happening to me? You know, like this, we have an ego, I am this, I am that, why are they doing this to me, or why is this happening to me? Right? And then it becomes a difficulty for us. So the whole point of the Gita is to show us how to use the intelligence to break through this material attachment, this material covering. And when we can break through that, then we can really appreciate the nectar that is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, Srimad Bhagavatam gives these technical points, like we see here. Then this point has been quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavad Gita is giving like the essence of all the philosophy. So the Bhagavatam will expand that to, you know, so much degree. But here, if we understand this, then we'll be able to actually appreciate the Bhagavatam, be able to operate these things and take advantage of also the nectar that's there. Both the technical points, how to free us from the material world, and all the very nice, wonderful things that attract us to Krishna, that are, you know, that we find inspiring. So we. Yeah. Any questions on this? Yes.
The Bhagavatam verse mentions that the mind being the three elements.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit related to the Ayurveda.
Yeah.
And devotees are into Ayurveda. And it's not too much in the bodily concept. Why don't you explain a little bit how we can use the Ayurvedic knowledge, or if it's too much in the bodily concept, should we give it up? Yeah. I know Bhakti Gadhead mentioned Javed much when he published articles about Ayurveda because he was afraid it was too much in the bodily concept.
Yeah. Well, basically, in the Vedic literature, there's 14 books of knowledge. That's mentioned, I think, in the 10th, 11th chapter or something. Krishna says of all the Vedic knowledge, of the Vedic literatures, then he is Vedanta. So, of the 14, one is transcendental and 13 are considered dovetailed material knowledge. So in that, it depends upon how you look at this knowledge, how you look at the material world. Is the material world something that we are enjoying, or is it the universal form? If it's Krishna's universal form, then you can operate those 13 books of knowledge for liberation. And if you think it's something for me to enjoy, then you will operate those 13 books of knowledge to entangle yourself in the material world. So that's why these other 13 books, they're sometimes called the paths of liberation, and they're sometimes called ignorance. Ignorance. Avidya. There's paravidya means transcendental. Apara means not transcendental, but in pursuance of the goal of paravidya. And then the third branch of knowledge is called avidya. Now generally we would think of, okay, then we have transcendental knowledge, and we have the Vedic literatures, aparavidya, and then we have all the, you know, karmi Western novels and books and nonsense. That is avidya. So that's one way of doing it, you know, because then you have what is transcendental and what is pious, and then what is sinful. But that's okay if you want to stay in this material world. That definition is fine if you want to stay here. But for those who want to get out of the material world, then the Vedic knowledge can also be avidya if it's not seen connected to Krishna. So if a body of knowledge you're dealing with, like astrology or this Vastu or Ayurveda or Sanskrit or the Dharma Shastras, logic, all these different things, if you cannot connect them to Krishna, then it's avidya. It's ignorance. And it will take you away from Krishna. Right? There's plenty of people here in India today who follow all the principles, who are very regulated since their birth. Their family has been like that. They know these branches of knowledge. They can speak fluent Sanskrit. They're so austere. They're so simple, so intellectual. But they wouldn't have a clue what the purpose of the Vedic literature that is to go back to Godhead. They will think it's for how to operate the material world, so you enjoy, you're pious, and you'll enjoy here, then you'll enjoy in the heavenly planets. Or, at best, they'll think it's for going to the Brahman. So that's called avidya. So, therefore, it's a delicate point. Is the Ayurvedic, it means if you want to know how the body works and how medicine works, there's Ayurveda. Like that. You don't have another alternative, really. It means modern medicine, then they work by observation, so they've touched upon principles that are already mentioned in the Ayurveda. You know, anything. You know, grammar. The grammar they talk about, modern grammar talks about verbs and nouns and pronouns, but that's all in the Sanskrit. It originates there. So, you know, your laws of Dharma, you'll see whatever any modern Dharma mentions, it's all there in the Vedic. So there isn't a material alternative. But if you can't connect it to Krishna, it's dangerous. So then it's better to just chant and ignore these things, and in this way purify yourself and go back to Godhead, than acknowledge these things, operate these things, but not chant Hare Krishna. Like that. it's much better. Even though one may be considered uncultured, unsophisticated, you're chanting and that devotees don't really know how to dress or behave or cook or talk. But if they really take shelter of chanting, where they actually follow the instructions of Lord Chaitanya in the third verse of Shikshastaka, then they will have all good qualities. All the good qualities of the demigods will be there. Even though they know no material knowledge, they will go back to Godhead. And a person who knows all the Vedic literatures nicely and follows them very strictly but doesn't know Krishna, doesn't know how to connect it to Krishna, then is like this. Sa'eva Gokara. It's no better than the cow or an ass. Right? Because a cow is very expert in doing so many things. I mean, they're very attached to all these things. You know, our family line, you know, our place, our ritual. It's all external. It's all after the intelligence, then it comes down to the ego. So all their good education, good birth, good placement in society, all these things, it's all mundane. It's all ego. So it's a very delicate balance. The best, what Krishna is saying here, is if you have the inclination by your conditioned nature to get into any of these branches of material knowledge, then do it how I say, for me. So that's his recommendation. Then you follow all these things, trying to avoid this lust, this anger, all these different things. So it becomes a delicate thing. The same knowledge in the hand of one person may be uplifting. The same knowledge in another will maybe contaminating. You could have two different people give a lecture on Ayurveda, and one will inspire you in Krishna consciousness, and the other one will just make you very mundane. It's simply if you know what it is, you know? It means if you understand that the material energy is simply Krishna's potencies that are expanded throughout the universe, and you see it in relationship with that, therefore you can only operate it in this way, then it pleases Krishna. Then it's service to Krishna. Krishna says he is the healing herb. So then how does Krishna and this herb act? Then according to that, he wants you to live a certain lifestyle, eat in a certain way, live in a certain way, do all these different things. Why? Because they are uplifting. You'll see Ayurveda will mention a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. Rising early in the morning. It may give mundane reasons. You sit in front of a fire early in the morning when the sun's rising and see the fire. It's very good for the eyes and it's very good for the mind. So therefore a materialist will sit in front of his fire and do yajna in the morning. Right? But the devotee doesn't sit in front of the yajna because he's going to get good eyesight and a peaceful mind. He sits there because it is service to Krishna. So they tell all these mundane things why you should do it. Right? You take a cold bath in the morning, it's good for the skin, it's good for the intelligence. You know, it makes one very attractive. It does so many things. So materialist will do it because of that. The devotee does it because that's how Krishna wants it done. Krishna wants his devotees to get up early to see him in the morning, and he wants them to come clean. Right? He doesn't want them to come dirty. So therefore, that's why we're taking bath. Not because then, you know, it gives a luster to the skin and makes us attractive and all these things. That's not why we're doing it. So this is the point, is that if it can be presented properly, you can take the text of the Ayurveda and explain all these same points that you get in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, if you know the science. And if you don't know the science, it'll just be medicine. It'll just be the body. So this is the thing, is since the body has to be engaged in Krishna's service, it should be kept healthy. Therefore, then there's a lifestyle, a diet that matches. And then the Ayurveda tells us how to do that. Right? It's also told in Pancharatra, but we may not catch it from there. Pancharatra also says we should get up in the morning. Right? If we want to do ritual, we have to get up in the morning because the yajnas have to be done and you have to be clean. So you have to take a bath to do the ritual. To do the Pancharatra, you have to get up and take your bath. Ayurveda will say if you want to be healthy, you got to get up and take a bath. Right? The Dharma Shastras will say, you know, if you want to be dharmic, then you have to be up before the Brahma Muhurta and take a bath. So they all say the same thing, but depending upon the conditioning of the living entity, he'll do it for one reason or another. He won't do it because it's transcendental, he'll do it because of, you know, it's religious, or because it's good for health, or, you know, there's some other reason. You know, memory is best and intelligence is best in the morning, I want to study my Sanskrit or learn my music, so I get up in Brahma Muhurta and take a bath and learn my whatever. It's the same thing, yeah?
In the West, the doctors operate in the operating theater early in the morning because the hand is steadiest.
Yeah, if you observe long enough, there was one devotee who was, it was funny, he went to, yeah, a long time back, maybe 15 years back or 20 years back, I think he was in Germany. He went to an eye doctor. You know how they have the thing with the letters? And, you know, the big letters and then this, like this. So then he was looking at it and, you know, can you see this? Yes. And the further T, and then the next one is O, and then M, and then U, and then C, and then H, and then S, and then E, and then X, and like this. And then he was looking, he went through the whole thing, then he figured out, it says, too much sex makes your eyes weak. That's what it was saying on the thing. So the eye doctor knew this, you know. Now, you know, it's not very popular, but whatever. So he knew that. So by observation, they figured out a lot. But, you know, by scientific research, they know a lot. Somebody showed me a thing, scientific research on this. And by those researchers, they don't recommend getting much involved in sex. When they see the effects on the body, this, that, and the intelligence, all this, they just say it's not. But generally you won't see that these kind of researches are publicized, you know. So by observation, you'll come to the same conclusion that the Vedic literature has already gave us. So that's what Prabhupada's recommending, is the descending process is quick. The ascending process, very slow. You know, like, modern medicine now, after 400 years, has figured out that there's something special about the Brahma Muhurta. But they won't know more than that. So 400 years, the Prabhupada just tells us very easily in a couple of sentences. Does that kind of answer? Yeah. It's a delicate point, is that if you can do it, and not just say, it means one can say anything. Speaking is, but actually do it, that one can connect the two and understand how Krishna in Goloka has transformed into Ayurveda. You know? Or how Krishna in Goloka is transformed into Sanskrit or into ritual. Or into logic, because that's what's happened. Logic is Krishna, right? Sanskrit is Krishna, Dharma is Krishna, the ritual is Krishna, the herb is Krishna. And then within the herb, what makes it work, that's Krishna. So if you can understand how that works, then you can use the science very happily. But if you can't explain it, you just know how astrology works, but you don't know how to connect it to Krishna, then you won't really be able to use it for Krishna conscious purposes. Because there'll be things that are you consider important which aren't really important. Or that are important you don't consider important. Like that. So there'll always be that problem. Is that okay? Yeah. Anything else?
It's almost related to the lecture,
Maharaj. Yes.
My question is not so much related to the lecture, but this is a doubt I have, which I like, I hope Maharaj can clarify. It is said that the spirit soul is atomic in nature, 1/10,000 part of the head. And it says when we develop our spiritual life, we develop the spiritual body. But if the spirit soul is so atomic, then what it means that if we develop a spiritual body, it seems like the spiritual body is something unnatural.
No. It's just like, I mean, it's just like this, even on the gross material understanding. Well, not so gross material understanding. Are you just the body, or are you all the things that extend from the body? Just the body. I mean, someone's identity isn't their clothes, how they walk, how they talk, what is their mood, how people perceive them, how they interact with others. Right? Or just the body. Okay, yeah. So the whole point is the spiritual body of the living entity is the manifestation of the soul's particular love for Krishna. In the Brahma Samhita, Yam Kama Krodha Sahaja Pranayari Bhiti Vatsalya Moha Guru Gaura Vasavya Bhavai Samprapya, what is it? Samprapya, something Sadrishim Tanomabha Samchintya. Okay, so what they're thinking of, what is the particular mood, they manifest this for Krishna. So it is the soul. The soul's love for Krishna is them. That's the natural position. So basically, is the soul manifests as 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair here in the material world because there is no love for Krishna, so they become like condensed. But the natural thing is they have a full form. That is them. It's not separate from them. So it's unnatural for the soul to be in the position of 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. It's more natural for them to be in the position of manifesting that mood of service towards Krishna. Understand? Like you have love for Krishna to serve him by wrestling, right? Wrestling and playing. So to wrestle, you need arms, you need legs. You know, it's good if you have a head also. You know, like that. And so then you'll have a body that can wrestle with Krishna, right? So then it should be a cowherd boy body, right? You don't wrestle with girls, you wrestle with boys, right? So therefore, then it'll be like that. You have maternal affection for Krishna, then you won't have a boy's body, right? You'll have an adult woman's body or an adult man's body, depending upon your particular mode of affection. How you love Krishna, that form will manifest in that way. Right? So like this, then the forms will manifest. So by mood, then you manifest. So the same thing is being said here. This is the opposite. By your, what is your goal? What is makes you happy in the spiritual world is to serve Krishna and please him. Right? Like that. But in the material world, it's to serve yourself. So then that same principle becomes split. Its pure form is love, is in the Hladini Shakti. And its impure form is then it manifests within the material world, and the mind manifests from goodness. Right? Because only when the mind is situated there is it happy. When it's in the present, it's happy. Right? When you get something you wanted, you're in the present. You're not in past or future. Because future's hankering and past is lamenting. So when you get something you want, you're in the present. So you're actually in goodness there. But it moves. Right? It's in the past, it's gone. So that becomes the perversion of the two. Then we see from the mind and the intelligence and the ego. Right? And the ego manifests the body. The senses manifest the body. So Krishna says, around the intelligence, the mind, then the senses and all the body and everything manifests based on his mood to enjoy the material energy. So when our mood is to serve Krishna, be a servant of Krishna, please Krishna, that's our goal. So Hladini is to please Krishna. Then we see it manifest that particular spiritual form that you can perform those activities with. Understand? So it's the same process. It's just in its pure form, transcendental form, or it's in perverted form. The principles are the same. It's just that here the principles work in a perverted way. Perverted means not connected to Krishna and taking us into matter. And in the spiritual world they work in their pure form. So then they take us more and more, you know, deeper and deeper into affection for Krishna. Does that make any sense? Okay. Yeah. So I guess we should end here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jāya,
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
jāya,
Jāya Nitya Gaura Prema.